Even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the autumn moon is bright.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Well, that's a very rare piece. It shows the wolf in the pentagram, the sign of the werewolf.
Werewolf? What's that?
Well, that's a human being who at certain times of the year changes into a wolf.
You mean runs around on all fours and bites and snaps and bays at the moon?
Oh, even worse than that sometimes.
You touched on a sort of train of thought I wanted to go down with you, and feel free to sort of connect that to the policeman part if you want, because I get the impression from reading the book that, like, you, especially you've been doing this for 20-plus years, you interact with a lot of policemen who may be, aside from you, like, the only people who hear these stories, in a sense, you know, because some people dare to tell the police, and they, in turn, I would assume, sort of, like, on the sly, and sometimes maybe more openly, confirm to you that, yeah, these things are reported more often than people might think.
Yeah, and you're right. It really usually does have to be on the sly. They're normally not appreciated by their superiors if they bring these things out. And I've been told by more than one department in more than one county that they have, you know, a certain pat answer they're supposed to give to people. Now, the woman in Hartford. There's Hartford and Heartland almost right next door to each other. I think it's Heartland. That woman who saw the Grayford 6-foot-tall creature did get a sympathetic response from a policeman who told her he had gotten similar reports from a couple of her neighbors.
Right, right. That's what made me think of this line of questioning. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but they usually do have to keep it on the QT. But, yeah, I have a couple of friends who retired early from the a different county's sheriff's department as deputies, and they had, between the two of them, they have seen 4 different upright wolf-like creatures in different parts of their territory, just running around doing their thing, you know, mostly from a distance, but they could tell what they were. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and one time they were sighting in their turkey hunting guns, and so they had scopes of some kind to look at them with. But they were just kind of, they sought me out because they just wanted an explanation, and they were just kind of amazed. One of them had also seen Bigfoot, because you figure these people are driving around in the wee hours of the night when probably most sightings occur between 10 and 5 a.m. or dawn, sometimes during dawn or during sunset. Not all by any means, but probably you know, more than 50% do. So they're driving in all of these places where most people, not that many people go during the day, much less at night, and they're sitting for long periods of time doing their computer work and paperwork, and that gives things that are running around time for them to lose fear of the vehicle or the person, and maybe also for them to get curious about who's in that vehicle and want to, you know, run up and see what they're doing for sitting there for such a long time in what they consider their nighttime territory.
Yeah, one would assume that police, it's like that old thing with, like, EMT see the weirdest type of stuff, you know. Overnight workers tend to see a lot of strange things. This whole thing really still, it's hard for me to, like, wrap my mind around, because as I said at the beginning of the conversation, it's like, where do you put these things? To me, they seem more paranormal than just sort of like the idea that, you know, that there's some kind of like bipedal, either a bipedal canine or a bipedal ness to canines that we don't know about. But you interestingly introduced that kind of idea at the Portland event where you mentioned, you know, you were sort of contemplating, like, could this be a learned behavior? You know, so talk about that aspect of it, because I was really like, it opened a whole new door in my mind where I was like, maybe it's possible, maybe that's what's happening here. So sort of pontificate a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, that was actually, you know, way back in 91, 92, probably my leading theory, you know, because I was looking at them and thinking, well, you know, other things. Everybody's seen the dancing dogs, you know, that are trained to walk and run upright and dance around. So we know they can do that. That's not supernatural. And maybe that there was a time when they, and I'm not even talking about evolution, just some local adaptations where, you know, a couple of them happened to be born with oversized paws and found it was easier to balance, and then they found some helpful things came from that, such as being able to stand up and really look around and see what was coming through the tall prairie grasses at you, or maybe it was better to carry away your prey that you just killed in your newly bicep developed upper limbs, rather than dragging it with your mouth and having to fight off all the skunks and the badgers and everything else that wanted it. You know, so there could have been some real advantages to these things by doing this. And we do know from studies of wolf behavior that wolves are very intelligent about training their young in certain hunting techniques and all kinds of things. They can teach each other behavior. That's known for a fact. And so I thought maybe it is possible, you know, that there were some and have been some and that they reproduced and spread out. But the thing is, if that were happening in the wild without motivation by humans or without motivations like having, you know, paws torn off in traps or something. I've never had anybody report an injured forelimb on one of these creatures. If that were happening, then we should see in pictures taken in the wild by drones or by helicopters flying over radio-collared animals, you know, because they radio-collar whole packs now in various places to study wolf populations. I think of moose and wolf study going on up in Lake Michigan on the Isle Royale, where these things are tracked by as individuals. And I even talked to Rolf Peterson, the person who manages that, and said, "Have you ever seen any wolves walking upright for any reason for any length of time?" And he's, "No, we just haven't." And I've asked other naturalists and, you know, people that I run into, people that I've sought. And the closest I ever came was talking to two trappers in a bar up in the UP, very, very far north UP, and asking if they had ever seen wolves doing anything like stand up on their hind legs or run. And they said, "Well, you know, if you come and they've got something, they're caught in the trap or whatever, they'll try and rear up, you know, or they may rear up to look at you, but then they just drop right back down." But I said, "But do they run away on their hind legs?" "Oh, no, we've never seen that." So it's not something that it's occurring in the wild among natural wolves. And so while it isn't a supernaturally induced thing to do, maybe there's influence that we don't know about. I don't know. I called my original idea the Indigenous Dog Man, and I did a forensic sketch based on most witnesses' reports that's in, I believe it's right in The Beast of Bray Road, the original book. But I just don't know.
Classic.
Well, it was the one I set out just to explain what all happened, you know, during during that time when it became known.
And then look what happened next.
Exactly. And still is happening, which is the crazy part to me. But it just didn't seem like you could totally, because there was also a lot of people were telling me this interesting thing, which is that although it looked like a natural wolf or dog hybrid on its hind legs, it did not completely act like one, because they'd say, you know, "I pulled up, I slowed up to look at it, and it turned its head and looked me in the eyes, and I felt it was giving me this message that if you tell anybody, I'll find you. Or if I wanted to, I could jump on the hood of your car." That's another one. These sort of veiled threats. And they would say, not like in English, like I'm not hearing an English voice in my head. I just feel it's telling me this somehow, which is a weird thing for person after person after person after person to say. And that does not strike me as a normal animal. You know, and I always use the example, if you were in the woods and you happened to see a bear and it glanced at you and it kept ambling on, as happened to my husband when he was deer hunting one time, you know, he did not say to me, "You know, that bear turned and it looked at me and it looked in my eyes and it said, if you tell anybody you saw me, I'll come and get you." You know, how crazy does that sound?
Right.
It's not what normal animals do. They don't do that. They just don't.
Yeah.
Some people communicate telepathically with animals. And Rupert Sheldrake's experiments, as you can read in his book, Dogs That Know When Their Masters Are Coming Home, show us that animals do seem to exhibit scientifically testable thought transference of some kind or receptive ability.
Yeah, like the title says, they seem to know when their owners are coming home. It's like I'm positive that there was that skeptics try to tear that whole thing apart, but it's like it seems pretty clear to me, you know.
Yeah, and so many people know it can verify it from their own pets. I mean, that
exactly.
is a fairly normal thing that you can, you know, almost test. So yeah, it just wasn't shaking out. And I still haven't given it up entirely, because there may be some incidents where people are just seeing something that has an injured paw that you can't see the injury, maybe, but they're protecting it by walking on their hind legs. That might be, but when you get creature after creature after creature after creature running and leaping and bounding on just their hind legs, that it just doesn't seem normal or natural anymore, and I don't know how to explain it. It's interesting because I've always said from the beginning that you may be seeing what all look like upright canines, but actually are coming from different places or different are manifested in different ways. And there are at least three different types of just Native American examples I can give you, where they have, first of all, the very wolf-like creature that was never human. Not human at all. It just can walk upright when it wants to because it's from the spirit world or a different realm, and it can come here. And it's been here for a very, very long time. And that is what most people are seeing. They're not our real wolves, but they are mimicking the looks of our real wolves and can,
right.
you know, be just like them, and they can go back to the spirit world. That's the first kind that we've already talked about. Then there's another kind that can be conjured up as a sort of always a spirit. They may even be invisible to whomever they encounter, but they're supposed to be set in place, maybe even thousands of years ago, by a shaman or someone who knew how to do it, as guardian spirits, and they would usually be found by, say, sacred grounds or burial grounds, that sort of thing, and would awaken to sort of harass or scare off whoever came to disturb those grounds. So that's a
right.
second kind. And they may occasionally, you know, get a glimpse of one. Then there's another kind that is, again, with shamans that have gone along what some of them might call a dark path, where they can learn to project some sort of energy or force, whether it's their own astral or psychic energy, whatever you want to call it, their own spirit, or it's something that they can draw upon that's already all around us that we just don't normally perceive. They can somehow project it either over their own bodies or separate from their bodies, so that almost in a twinkling they can give the appearance of this other creature. And they're also mimicking the natural animals. There are bear walkers, skin walkers, different types creatures that they can manifest as. But the thing is, with these, they're a little different looking than the other ones. They're a little more human. They might be bigger. Their eye shine will be red rather than the normal canine yellow and green. They may have actual shoulders rather than just more highly developed muscles on their forelimbs. They may have more hand-like paws. They may be on feet flat-footed rather than on their toe pads. And
exactly.
There's
a wide variance, and there's one in the book that's like a glowing. There's a glowing one in the book where it was like, what is going on with that one? So it's, yeah, I think the idea of a projection may be part of it. And I want to pivot just for a second back to the mist, because in the book you also mentioned that at one point he came out to check a different game camera. And the mist was, like, behind him, but at the time when he went out there, he didn't see it when he was out there. It was invisible to him, and then later he took the game camera and he went to change the SD card, I think is what happened.
Right.
And it took a picture, and behind him was the mist, and He didn't see it when he was out there. So, like, the myth is also,
right.
If we didn't creep you out, folks, earlier with this mist stuff, it's also invisible. So, you know, who knows what's going on?
Humanite. Well, yeah, and I was there when that happened. My friend Sandra Schwab and I were out there with him, helping him check the deer. And we did not see any mist. You know, we were looking at him, but and we could see him the whole time. But then it showed up on the trail camera. You know, he was like waist deep in it. So
it's just spooky too if you think about it, because you don't want to be in the mist.
I think so. I don't think that I would. No, I really don't. Because to me, it seems to me like some manifestation of just a slightly different electromagnetic field. And, you know, our bodies are pretty finely tuned things with the EMF fields we normally have and produce and that we live in and with in the natural world. And I really think that so many of these things just act like something that is slightly off kilter, according to, you know, the vibrations of our electromagnetic field that we're supposed to have. And that would make sense if there were a series of parallel worlds, and I'm just off the cuff theorizing here, not even theorizing, just off the cuff rambling subjectively. You know, what if
that's what the show's all about, Linda? Yeah, this is the we're digging into this mystery here on the show, Halloween special. Yeah, go for it. Keep rocking and rolling.
Into the hardcore. Well, if there are indeed these many parallel worlds, and they're each, say that each one is just a grade different in their EMF frequency that they have, they could possibly, you know, come into our world and be seen in different forms, different variations of light or of solidity, and then we would look a little different maybe to them too. But things like this, like this mist could show up, you know, not with our bare eyes, but on this electronic device that we have that maybe captures a little more of a range of the EMF fields than we would be used to. And that would explain why all the pictures of them are blurry, because they're projecting a slightly different EMF field than what we're tuned to. And I'm talking about the creatures now. Most of them are blurry, but I think it's so telling that, you know, you go back to the Patterson-Gimlin film of Patty, the Bigfoot, which I think are very convincing. Yeah, I know they're terribly controversial, but the more I look at them, and
I like it. I'm a fan. I think it's real.
Yeah, I do too. And they're clear. And the thing was, those were not shot with any sort of electronic. They were shot with the regular old, you know, real film, REEL film. Where it wasn't a matter of having to match up to an EMF field. And I don't know if there's if that even holds scientific water. It's just what I have thought about, you know, and wondered if there's a way that could be tested.
Yeah, well, whatever these entities, for lack of a better term, are, it seems like there's some kind of camouflaging going on, in a sense. You know, clearly with the mist.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know what. Yeah, it's like it's distorting your view, you know, of something. I don't know. It's very, it's oh God, pardon the pun. It's mystifying. It really is. It's really, it's fascinating. And I don't know what to make of it. And the creepy part, in the sense about this kind of stuff too, is like, by the very nature of the mystery, it's like we don't have any stories of people that go into the portal and come back. We don't have any stories of people who run afoul of these dog creatures. Has anyone ever, like, shot at one?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's happened various times. And it's the same in most cases as people say with the Bigfoot, where they're sure they hit it. You know, they can hear the thud, thud. In some cases, they've emptied automatic clips into one. And it generally just runs off into the brush, is never found, sometimes doesn't leave even so much as a drop of blood trail behind it. It's like they have Kevlar on under their fur. Now there has been an incident. There was one time where I did a talk in a little southern Wisconsin town, and after it was all done and just about everybody had left, this older farmer came up to me. It was a very rural community. And he said, you know, I'm pretty sure I shot one of those. I saw, you know, the wolf-like thing. It was walking upright. It was years ago. He said it was on my farm. I thought it was a wolf, and I was scared, so I shot it. And then I was afraid to report it because, you know, that was big-time wolf protection days. And
that makes sense.
Yeah, he didn't want to get fined or have his gun confiscated or anything else. So he said, I just buried it on my farm. I said, well, have you ever thought of digging it up? And he says, uh-uh, no way. Nope, that's staying where it is. I would gladly, you know, had him dig it up, but he would not hear of it, of course. But, you know, this guy had nothing to gain by telling me that in any way. He didn't seem to be getting his jollies out of it. And he was actually really alarmed when I suggested digging it up to see if there was a skeleton there. But the other bad thing, or not bad thing, but confusing thing, people say, well, how come there aren't any dead ones? And the answer is, there may well be with these upright canines, because if you have one and it's dead and it doesn't look like anything but a canine,
not upright
and it's
anymore.
Exactly. It can't walk upright when it's dead. You would just say, well, that's a really big dead wolf or a really big dead dog. Oh, it's kind of funny long paws, but other than that, you know, that wouldn't even seem so strange that you'd think, you know, more than once or twice about it. And so you wouldn't really know. With a Bigfoot, you would know. You would have to know.
Right, right.
That's completely different. But both of them seem to not care as much about guns as they do about cameras in many cases.
Well, if there's something camouflaging itself, that would make sense. You know what I'm saying? It's
right.
Like they, because that to me, yeah. I almost think in a sense like there's an observer effect at work here where it's like it gets seen and then it takes on the form of this dog thing. You know what I mean?
No, I've had people suggest that, and I think it's not crazy because, again, cutting-edge physicists are saying the human brain is a quantum computer or, in effect, works like one, and that they are seeing applications to which they can make different things happen and tie inventions to it. You know, you can just see all the money bells ringing, ding, ding, ding. Not the pure scientists, but many of the people who fund this sort of research. But if our brains are really quantum computers, then they can react on a quantum level with other entities, other matter, other energies, perhaps, maybe a better way to put it. So if you were trained in a certain way to do this or were able to, or maybe the other thing is using your brain, you know, just like we would pick up our laptop and use it, it uses our brain to then manifest or project or show an image, three-dimensional perfect image of, you know, what they have found rattling around in our heads. Maybe it's an image of a Bigfoot. You know, maybe it's an image of a ghost. And, you know, I actually had an experience that sort of points that this could be possible. I won't say proves it, but it happened when I was doing research. I authored the Weird Michigan books. The Weird Michigan, Your Travel Guide to blah, 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 Barnes & Noble. And I had to do a lot of traveling all over Michigan. I put like 5,000, and it was fun, like 5,000 miles in my car.
Wow.
And sometimes a place would just, you know, strike me as interesting, and I'd stop in and I'd try and find the historian. And that happened in Manistee, along the western edge of Michigan. I walked in there one day, and the historian pointed me to an old German. I said, is there any place that's supposed to be, you know, has a legend or haunted or anything like that? And normally I would just walk in and get a little short statement from the owner and take a picture and go, because that was all I really had time to do. Now, this lady did not know me from Adam, did not know I was coming that day, knew nothing about it. She was running other businesses in this old brick building that was built by a German family around 1900, and then several of them died in it. But one of the young brothers in the family died of diphtheria when he was like a young teenager. And he was seen often in the basement of that building. He had poltergeist-type energies, sometimes even seen outside in the parking lot. And, Basement Billy was what they called him. So I went there to see if I could see Basement Billy, and I walked in, and she took me downstairs. It was a big, huge wareroom type house or type of room,
yeah,
with nothing in it, just kind of a partial dirt floor, and all of the ductwork was wrapped in brown paper, so there was nothing shiny and reflective. One bare light bulb on the far end, and one bare light bulb by the stairs behind us. And I said, well, you know, let's just stand here in the dark, pitch dark. Just turn off the lights. We'll just stand here in pitch dark for 5 minutes and see if anything happens. And I'm just ticking off the time in my mind, thinking, okay, you know, 30,000, trying to count the seconds, whatever. And all of a sudden, this thing appeared like maybe 10 feet away from me. It was a low ceiling, and it was right near the ceiling. So it was like 7 feet up and about, you know, really not very far away from me at all. And it was a globe the size of a basketball. Now, if you've read Monsters Among Us, you may recognize this from another story. It was very similar to it. A globe the size of a basketball that was not giving off light. It was not lighting up the room, but I could see it. It was just this round thing, and I felt like it was aware of me, like it was sentient and trying to check me out, like it was curious. And I thought, no,
did
this
were you?
Real.
Did
and
the
I,
other people see it too?
Well, I'll get to that in just a second.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
I'll tell you what. That's no problem. No problem, because that's the big punchline. So I looked away, and it was still perfectly pitch black. I literally couldn't see my hands in front of my face. And I looked back at it. It was still there. And then just as I managed to raise my camera up to get, because I had a good camera hanging around my neck and my hands on the camera, just as I raised the camera up, it slowly just kind of collapsed in on itself and it was gone. And that was really frightening in itself because I saw that. So I didn't get the picture of it. But then I heard the lady kind of take it, draw her breath in sharply. And I said, should we turn the light back on? Because I wanted nothing but to get out of that basement more than anything
yeah.
else in the world right then. So she turned it on. And she told me she saw Basement Billy, and I said, well, what did you see? And she said, oh, just like they all say he is, you know, like a young boy dressed in old-fashioned clothing, and he was just standing there. And then I described what I saw. We saw two different things. We both saw a lighted object in that basement where there was no light, but we saw different forms of it. I was expecting nothing. So I think I saw the plain orb of just electromagnetic field or something like that. I don't know what to call it, really. And she saw the full form that she'd heard so many stories about, and I think she might have even seen it once before because that's what she was expecting.
That's crazy. So she saw a ghost of whatever, of a little kid.
Well,
while you were seeing this ball of light.
And neither of us said anything to the other one because if she was like me, I was just trying to grapple with what this thing was, you know, and I wasn't going to yell out. I wasn't going to yell out and spoil it. And I think she was the same way until
yeah.
I heard she kind of went, you know, and that's when I knew she had seen something. So we then turned the light on and quickly departed from the basement. But yeah, that book, if anybody has the Weird Michigan book, it's called Weird Michigan Sees Basement Billy.
That's absolutely amazing.
It was deeply frightening. Deeply frightening.
Really?
But, well, because something was using our consciousness to show itself to us. Obviously.
Yeah,
we weren't manipulating one another's consciousness, you know. It was. So,
it's one of those things where you hear it and it's like, I wish that would happen to me, but then, like, you don't really want it to happen to you. Yeah, I guess I can see where you're coming from in a sense because, yeah, I'm imagining, like, that would be pretty terrifying, especially,
yeah.
as you say, you felt like it sensed that you, there was, like, a connection. It wasn't just like you were seeing some kind of, like, natural phenomenon, for lack of a better term, or unsentient.
Like. No, and there was absolutely no place for any kind of light thing like that to come from down there. You know, there were no windows, you know, the lights were out, everything was in brown paper, dirt floor, there was nothing that could have possibly created. I didn't have my camera up to my eyes yet, so I wasn't looking through the camera. I saw that with my bare eyes. And you know, I had a similar experience out in that hayfield with the owner and with a colleague of ours. So, it's happened to me twice now where I've seen that with another witness who, except in that case, we all saw the same thing, three of us at the same time. But in this first case, we were seeing what was in our minds. And mine was just formless, just like, okay, how long till I can go drive to the next town? Because I really was tired, I remember, and I wanted to get going. And I wasn't always like that. It was a lot of fun, don't get me wrong, doing that, driving around. But sometimes at the end of the day, you know, and I joked about this with a couple of my ride-along people that came with me on these trips, you know, after so many weird things, you're taking pictures of statues and stuff, you finally get to the point where you could see Bigfoot, you know, dancing the two-step in the ditch right next to you and just go, oh, no, not Bigfoot. No, I can't take that. And you just drive off. You can max out, you know, and I was that, and maybe it was because I was sort of empty and maxed out that day that I was able to see it and that it felt like it could approach me. I don't know.
That's interesting. Yeah, you're sort of like your defenses were down in a sense. Yeah, because you've been searching and chasing these mysteries for so long. Yeah, it's interesting. Well,
right.
it's remarkable in a sense because it's like I haven't had really any paranormal experiences happen to me. I'm listening to you, and you're telling me all these crazy stories. Like, I am going to take a walk in the woods to see if I can encounter something. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. So this thing just looked like
alone.
A ball of light, and the lady. That experience, and what? See, this is the kind of thing that like people who listen to the show will get, and people who are in the community will understand. People on the outside, no, it's like. Folks, Linda would not make this story up. She's not going to make up a story about seeing this glowing thing. And she's as mystified by it as all of us. And to me, the fact that you saw it as one thing and the woman saw it as a really distinctly different sight,
right,
is quite remarkable. You know, I think it says a lot about the phenomenon, whatever, what, you know, we still don't know much about it, but it says something.
Right. And, you know, if she were trying to put one over on me, which she wasn't, I mean, she had other business, she was nice about it, but it wasn't her big thing, you know, if she were trying to get me to see something, she would have said, well, what did you see? And then said, oh yeah, that's what I saw too. But she just told me what she saw. And I knew then it was not what I saw, but it was still a light form. You know, and I just, people say, well, what do you think it was? And I say, I think it was an electromagnetic manifestation of the light form, but I don't know how or what or why. I just don't. I don't have that knowledge. Maybe some people are able to take themselves to a place where they're fed knowledge, but I haven't achieved that. I just observe. I feel I'm the reporter, you know, and I'm there to say, what I saw, felt, experienced, or more often, and more importantly, what other people saw, felt, and experienced.
Right, right. If it happens to you, it's a lucky break / sometimes nightmarish situation. So yeah.
People will say, well, if I see it, it's pretty convenient, you know, which makes me always reluctant to tell my experiences.
I
because, of course,
yeah.
It would be.
Again, though, that's one of those things that's easier to say from the safety and comfort of Twitter or Facebook, where it's like, yeah, dude, well, you're not going out into the woods. Like, it's like the old adage about UFOs. It's like, well, how come I don't see any UFOs? It's like, how often do you look up? You know?
That's true. Yeah, that's true. And a lot of people who see them would say
they wouldn't have wanted to. Yeah, exactly. Now, isn't it one of the paradoxes, we can kind of maybe dig into this a little bit, like, because I feel like I've heard this sort of like vehement argument from the skeptics who just like can't open their minds to trying to figure this out, so they just immediately have to be like, no, it's not real. But like the argument is like that the dogs can't, you could train some kind of different ape to like walk around on 2 feet, like they have them in the circus and stuff. And maybe with a dog you could, but it's like super unlikely or impossible because of the physicality of a dog for them to walk on 2 feet for like a, you know, as a lifestyle, I don't know what you would call it, as an everyday sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Normal habit. They do in most cases show that they can drop down to all fours if they want, you know, they don't have to go around. It's not an either-or type of thing. You know, so there is that possibility too, because most times people aren't watching them, you know, run like marathon races. It's mostly short sprints. And we don't know how long they could go on running. You know, nobody's ever had one to test, you know. So it may be that they've developed this tolerance to being a biped just for short amounts of time. And that's really most of the sightings are just, unless the thing is standing there, if it's running, it's over in seconds, you know. So you haven't really seen a very long demonstration of how it could do that. But it is true, you know, that... that's one thing I've often said. That's why it doesn't seem like it should be natural for them. But yet, on the other hand, and this is really the only thing that keeps me in it and the reason that I got curious in the first place, is that people keep seeing these things and they're doing odd, they're performing in strange ways, you know. And why? Why do so many people keep on seeing all of these things with a much more consistency than one would expect between their descriptions?
Exactly. It's, and again, like we established earlier, it's these aren't people that have read the book and then they see one the next day. It's like, it's the opposite of that.
Not at all.
Yeah. And to your point, again, it's like, next time you hear the skeptics, in a sense, it's like, we're not talking about Planet of the Apes here. We're not talking about, like, dogs that are, like, walking around regularly, but it's something, you know, much like a lot of our other paranormal events, it's like, it's a very split-second phenomenon, in a sense, you know. It may be 30 seconds, but it's still, like, an incredibly short amount of time. And I think folks like you and me are like people in ancient times trying to figure out lightning. It's like, it only happens for, like, a split second. How are you going to even figure out what it is or where it comes from, you know?
Right, exactly. Well, and you know, it isn't as if these things are some invented new form of creature. I mean, it's not like we're seeing the old, you know, logging camp snallygaster, whatever that thing was.
Yeah.
You know, it's a folk tale, but it's not like we're saying everybody is suddenly seeing small green elephants with spikes on their back and horses' tails. You know, and it's nothing like that. We're seeing an animal that lives here, has lived here for very, very many years. I mean, not eons, that would be the wrong thing to say. Millennia would be safe to say. It's part of our ecosystem and our natural state of being. Wolves have been here and have their part to play in all of this. It's not like something unknown in form is interjected. It's that something that looks like this natural creature is interjected in our midst, doing things and behaving in ways that the other normal creature does not, and that we are not usually expecting to see a known animal behaving that way.
It does fit with cryptozoology, and you kind of almost have to expand, in a sense, the original sort of definition of cryptozoology, which is like mystery animals and out-of-place creatures, to also include sort of like creatures that are behaving out of the ordinary. I think that's why I think the whole cryptid, bipedal cryptids, should be, you know, put into the cryptozoology category for now until we can figure out more about them, if we can.
Yeah, and I think that they generally have. You know, I think it's just really, you know, the last few years, as you say, becoming accepted enough among people who study these things to say that, yep, there really is a lot of anecdotal evidence. There even are footprints that we have, other sorts of evidence, not proof, but evidence. And people are willing to take a look at it because the witness testimony is just getting amazing in terms of how many people we have, the diversity of the witnesses, their credibility. You know, people like to make fun. I've had people ask me, while I was having after a talk, when I have questions, I had one guy say, well, are many people who see these things named Bubba, you know?
Oh, like to try and make a joke?
Yeah, to try and make a joke. Yeah, like he's trying to, you know, put down backcountry people or, you know, think that they're all, or people will say, well, they're all drunk. People that seem, well, no, when's the last time you had too much to drink and you saw a natural animal standing up? You don't see hallucinations from just having too much to drink. You pass out and then you get, when you get alcoholism and the DTs, well, then you're going to see some hallucinations, but it probably won't be a really consistent thing from what I've heard. So, and it would be quite different. So, you know, all these things that people throw up against it, I think, are defense mechanisms, because they don't want to think. There's a certain denial that takes place. We don't want to think often that such things can be occurring or many people can be seeing them. To me, all it does is help prove that there is indeed some sort of spirit world, you know, just like the Bible says, the Native Americans' traditions say, and that if you believe that, if you're a person of any sort of faith and you believe that, then why wouldn't you believe that that world can manifest sometimes, you know, when all of the traditions and religions tell us that they do. They interact, they become agents of different powers and principalities, and we don't know what they are or what they're up to. And again, not everything everyone sees would be that. Some might still be natural animals that just learn to walk upright. There may be an undiscovered type of primate roaming North American forests. I don't know. It's the jury is still so far out, you know, that I just don't even anticipate a verdict in my lifetime.
Yeah. It's very difficult. Well, it's interesting in a sense, because it could be all these different things. I think it almost is, in a sense. You know what I mean? I mean, there may be a few of these there may be some instances where it's a wolf that takes up a bipedal stance briefly to scurry through a backyard, you know, or sniff into the garbage or something like that. And then there's other ones where it's like, it could be entirely interdimensional or something. It could be like some kind of energy force putting on this bipedal canine cryptid persona as it gets noticed by somebody driving down the road. So it's very, you almost don't want to put any category. You can't put it in any categories in a sense, you know, because we just simply don't know what it is.
Right. That's exactly what I think. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Now, this book, Monsters Among Us, that came out like a year and a half ago or so. And again, I'm sorry we didn't get you on the show when it first came out, but I'm glad we did tonight.
It's just
Halloween.
About a year.
And, yeah. Okay.
It was just a year exactly.
Oh, nice. So it's like an anniversary, and it worked out well for us because we got you on for Halloween night. So what have you been working on since? What kind of stuff can people expect, you know, from Linda Godfrey in the future?
Well, I'm working on another book. When it comes out, I've got a couple of months to finish it, and then when it comes out, will be up to the publisher, which is Penguin Random House. So it just is a matter of when it fits in their list the best. So I can't really predict that, but I'm working very hard on it, and I've got some pretty interesting things, you know, that I've kind of put together. And it's just coming at it from another tack, something I haven't really looked a lot at before. So that's kind of interesting. And if you want to keep up with me, not to put in a self-plug, but you can go to my blog, LindaGodfrey.com. Yeah, it's just Linda Godfrey, GodFrey.com. No WWs or anything. It's my WordPress blog. And I'll put up reports that come in that seem very compelling, and I don't have an immediate place to put them in a book, but I want them to be seen. So you'll see things that are there but not in the books. Sometimes just little things that happen. I try and keep up some recent podcasts. You'll have to send me your a link that I can send people to for this show, and then I'll put this up on there. But it also has a list of my books. It has there's a form where you can send me your own experience that you had, and my email is also there. So all kinds of things, basic questions people ask, lots and lots that you can find there. Just again, LindaGodfrey.com.
Nice. Now we're almost near the end of the show, but I wanted to ask you just in general, like, what do you ever like reflect on this? Because you're one of the few people I've talked to on the show, in a sense, who like helped usher in a whole genre, in a sense. You know, it's that you really put these wolf bipedal canine cryptids. I like that term the most. But what do you call it? What do you call these things in general? Do you have a preferred name?
Generally, just upright unknown canines.
There you go. These things on the map, the upright unknown canines. So, I mean, how does that feel? Would you reflect a little bit on that? You know, it's pretty amazing. You've been doing this for 25 years. Why do you think this happened to you? How did this adventure unfold, in a sense? Do you ever think about that?
Well, I guess, you know, some people would call it kismet. Some people would call it God's plan. Although I'm like, why did you plan this for me? You know, it's nothing I ever expected or intended. It's for some reason I was in the right place at the right time to do that first story. And something in it just touched a chord in people that I never expected, my editor never expected. We thought it would die down in 2 weeks and never be thought of anymore. And here it is again, 26 years later. And so it's just astounding to me that it has endured. I guess part of it was that really there hadn't been anyone who was collecting large bodies of reports of canines or things that looked like werewolves. So anytime anyone had some sort of an interest in looking for some sort of contemporary representation of werewolves for Halloween, usually, or whatever, I pretty much for a long time was almost the only person keeping track of those things. Not quite. My friend Nick Redfern and other people were doing this. There were a few mentions here and there, but not in a consistent manner. So people were tracking me down and finding me, you know, snail mail for 10 years before, I had web presence and that kind of thing. And it just still floors me every time I think about how many people there are who have seen these things and are seeking for answers and looking. And if nobody puts them together, then, the answer is going to be that much farther away. So I think of myself as sort of the accidental keeper of the lore, because that's how it was in the beginning. I felt people are sending me these heartfelt stories that they just want someone else to see and validate. And
yeah,
I have the obligation to do that for them. They send it to me. Maybe it'll all be important someday, who knows? So I felt obligated to be the one to keep and put them together. And my mind is not one that just runs for, ooh, let's collect a big bunch of scary stories. That doesn't interest me. I'm not interested in really horror per se, although there's certainly a lot of terrifying aspects to many of these stories. But what interests me is the connections between them, what explanations there may be for them, making some sort of sense of them, connecting them to things that have gone before us. And that's what really intrigues me and keeps me wanting to be at it. But I just never really expected it. My degree originally is in art education, and I was working on my master's in library education when I decided I didn't want to do anything in a junior high library after having a chance to teach in.
Well, see, that's why I thought you. Yeah, that's why I thought you seemed like a history teacher or something. Librarians is right there too.
An art teacher. I was an art teacher, which is a little wilder than the librarian teacher, but I did teach art. You know, I was doing that part time at different schools during those 10 years and the years after I left the newspaper. I like teaching art. I really enjoy it. The younger the kids, the better I like them. They're so open and free with their expression. So I've done that and enjoyed it too. But, in the end, this is what's really – and I've also been a commercial and fine arts artist and do many of my own illustrations, which also makes it fun. But I guess I just feel like somehow I was put in that place at that time. It befell to me, and I've just been doing my job.
Yeah, you've been, like, enlisted as the unknown upright canine expert. It's really remarkable. It's just sort of like if you pull the camera back, it's like just it's funny the way life unfolds sometimes, you know. It's pretty amazing. And you've done amazing work, I got to say. Go ahead. This delay is going to kill us, Linda. I don't know what we're going to do. Well, I had one other note here that I wanted to bring up. Connects to a lot of the stuff we've been talking about, and I should have mentioned it. You know, it's completely out of context now, in a sense. But we got like 10 minutes left. I noticed that in one of the cases, the similar mist case, the woman, the family where the house had the mist, after and canine encounters, after these or even as these were going on, there was like weird ghosty type activity in the home that adds a whole other layer to this thing, which was completely blew me away. So I guess talk a little bit about that as we head toward the end of the show here.
Yeah, and that's another thing, that even when the creatures themselves don't look like anything but pure wolf or pure upright dog things, very often, very frequently, people will tell me they started having poltergeistic things. In that particular house, I think their bathtub was turning on and off. Now, this woman's husband is a building contractor. He prides himself, I've met him several times, in doing perfect work and keeping everything in his property in perfect repair. And here's their bathtub water just turning itself on and off. Things like their little dog looking at something in the corner and barking and barking and barking and nothing being there. You know, that sort of thing. And I've heard other very similar stories. It seems to happen very often with Bigfoot sightings, too. And actually, this happened to me, where you're sitting in your house, and all of a sudden, it sounds like something just slammed a fully grown heifer cow into the siding of your house. You know, and I've seen houses where the siding was actually dented in. We had wood cedar siding at the place where it happened to me, but it was unmistakable, not just like a little, you know, bang or something, like, but just like something that big was slammed, and you're expecting the windows to crumble. That's another fairly often. People will say that they hear footsteps coming up on their porch. There's things looking in their windows at them, other weird noises and that kind of thing. So, yeah, that does add another layer to it, because you're saying, well, this must be just a known animal walking on its hind legs. I see it over there. Yeah, I can see it. It's got a wolf head. It's got a wolf body on its toe pads. It's, you know, it must be a big natural wolf. But then all these weird things start happening.
Yeah.
And there was one family that it got so bad, it was doing things like convincing people that it, taking on the appearance of a family member, or making sounds that sounded to them like a member of the family was talking to them to get them outside.
Oh,
and
my God.
Now, I've also heard, I mean, it gets really creepy. And that particular one, I think, was near a Native American reservation. And I was just reading the other day that there are, that can be a trademark of, you know, a shaman who is projecting a certain animal. So, and I don't get into how that is done or what they do or anything like that. That's, I kind of have my wall where I stop. That's enough for me to know. And I don't want to know the hows, whys, wheres, or anything like that. It's just not something I want to know anything about. So you have to go somewhere else for that. But I can note the connections, and that is what people have said in many cases.
Yeah, it almost makes you wonder if it's like, I'm imagining like something in another dimension running, and then, you know, maybe it gets distracted by something in that dimension, and it snaps into ours and slams into the house. You know, like why else would a large mysterious thing like come slamming into, you know, a home? It's very weird.
Yeah, it's as good an explanation as any. Yeah, it's as good an explanation as any.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, all right. I think we're going to wrap it up, because I'm pretty tuckered out from a long Halloween, and I'm sure you are as well. Did you give out a lot of candy?
Yeah, it was pretty cold here, not quite as much as last year, but there were still lots of cute kids in their costumes, and we had our dog dressed up in his little pumpkin hat and jester collar, so, you know, he was all ready too. So it was fun. It was a good evening. And then maybe even better by talking to you.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, Linda, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Happy Halloween. The book we talked about tonight was Monsters Among Us. Of course, she's written the classic Beast of Bray Road, Weird Michigan, a whole bunch of other stuff. And you can find out more at lindagodfrey.com. Thank you so much again. Thank you for spending your Halloween with us. I really do appreciate it. And it was awesome meeting you in Portland. And hopefully it's not the last time we our paths cross.
Right. I certainly hope so. Thank you, Tim. And many thanks also to all of your listeners. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, listeners. Have a good night, Linda.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you, too. All right, folks. Well, there you go. That was Linda Godfrey. Thank you very much to Linda for coming on the show and having Halloween night free for us, for the first and only BOA Audio Halloween Night Spooktacular. What's going on with the show? I got a new phone. We had Linda on Skype, so we don't know for sure. We can't judge anything yet. It's an unfolding process. Linda was on through Skype through the switchboard, but I'm here on my new phone. So I noticed that there wasn't any crackling, which is good. And hopefully the folks in the chat room said the sound was good. And I think that'll improve the quality of the show as we head toward the end of Season 10 here. So, again, I can't thank Linda Godfrey enough for coming on the show. The website, lindagodfrey.com, the book, Monsters Among Us, and a whole bunch of other cool stuff. And she's doing yeoman's work, man. I got to tell you, folks, I put her over huge in the show, but she's doing stuff that I wouldn't dare to do. I really wouldn't be heading out into the woods where people are saying they saw these dog men. But she's out there, and she's encountering weird stuff, and that's what makes it really cool, too. Because it's like, as I said during the show, now I want to go out into the woods, but I don't know if I want to encounter a dog man. Next week's program, I couldn't tell you, but we're finally through the Halloween season, and we're into the holiday season, and who knows what's going to happen. But I have a real liking, kinship with November. I really like it a lot, so I don't know why. I don't even know what that means. But I like November, and we're going to have good shows, I'm sure of that. Because this is episode 22, and it means we're really close to the end now. We only got about, a little over 10 more shows to go. And we got a lot more folks to talk to. So who knows? We may have to stretch this one out because there's a lot of classic BOA Audio guests I want to get on here for the final season. I know you're thinking of the folks as I'm saying that. You're William Zabels. You're Adam Go-Rightleys. Your Paul Kimballs. We got to get these folks on season 10. This is ridiculous. So they'll be on maybe in November, maybe in December, but they'll be on before the season ends. So that's going to be exciting. And we'll have information on next week's show at Banal of America and BOA on Facebook. Just punch in those. Generally, we try to announce next week's guest by the Thursday, Friday, let's be honest, Friday or Saturday before the next show. So pop on over to Banal of America Friday, Saturday, and you're listening to the MP3 now, so you don't need that. And that's about it. And send me an email or let me know on Facebook how the sound is with the new phone. We went to Best Buy and bought a brand new cordless landline telephone. So hopefully we can keep the lo-fi element of the show, the low-tech sound, with less crackliness and less weird ghosts coming through the connection. And on that note, that's a good segue. Happy Halloween, my friends. Thank you for joining us tonight. Until next week, this is Tim Banal. Thanking you for listening and signing off.